Welcome to our second podcast. My name is Greg Hartigan from Pragmatic Resilience. As I'm recording this, I'm a couple of days away from Christmas. The preparations are well underway and I've been a good boy this year. Rather than bunging her a box of chocolates from the garage, I've bought my wife a lot of presents this year. So I've really prepared particularly well and I'm overly pleased with myself. Now, the chances are you're not listening to this during the Christmas season. So Christmas is either a receding memory or is something which is growing increasingly and alarmingly imminent, and you've got to gear up for and prep for that annual routine. But today I want to talk to you about a year-round phenomenon, and one that's fascinated me and one which rears its head specifically at Christmas time, and that is family dynamics. Family dynamics. Now, what do I mean by family dynamics? Well, it's best illustrated as follows. Imagine it's the first time, you're the younger child, the younger sibling rather. It's the first year that you're going to have the whole family around for Christmas lunch. And part of you is determined to show them that you are an adult, that you're competent and capable. You want them to take you seriously. And you're a couple of hours into the whole thing. The family's eating, and then the family dynamics start, and you find yourself being teased and poked fun at, and it feels uncomfortable. Or you're sat round hoping that last year's argument won't rear its head again. Your older brother and dad had a ferocious argument around the Christmas table just before the Queen's speech about whether or not Arsenal won 2-0 or 1-0 back in 1985. And everybody knows around the table that the issue is not about Arsenal or a football match. It's actually the ongoing feud between your dad and your older brother. Rooted, nobody is quite sure, but it's there, and there's that ongoing unresolvedness. And if you think your family's above those family dynamics, well, you'll be very, very wrong indeed. I wasn't brought up with my biological family, but I spent many, many, many situations and Christmases watching and observing other families, and now as a father, my own as well. So what do I mean by family dynamics? Well, they essentially comprise two things: rules and roles. Rules are the acceptable ways of speaking and behaving that regulate family functioning. And then the roles are the patterns of behaviour acceptable to other members played by individuals. Because you know, as an individual, the family is a unit comprising individuals, and it's greater than the sum of all of those individuals. We'll consider each of them in a second, but you know, family dynamics can be good or bad or in between. Neutrally speaking, as I say, they are the rules and the roles by which the family functions. And I've long been fascinated by how people behave, especially in family settings. I love people watching. One of the most fascinating books I ever read in the early 90s was by an individual called Virginia Satir. That's S for sugar, A-T-I-R. Well worth getting some of her books. I know her theories have now been expanded on and so on and so forth. But they really do stand the test of time. And her essential thesis, or one of them, as I understood it, was this. She likened the family unit, and I'm not necessarily talking about mum and dad and 2.4 kids. It's any unit, any tribe or community or any gathering of people who want to relate to each other. She used the biological concept of symbiosis, I believe it is, and she observed how an organism in nature would adapt to the environment and so as to remain intact. And that made sense to me. So under threat of external circumstances, either within or without the control, a family will adapt. So for example, if there's a new girlfriend or boyfriend of your son and daughter, then they'll be brought into the family, and instantly the family will adapt in response. And she said the family could adapt well, which is what resilience is. It's that bounce back ability to be able to keep functioning, or it will maladapt. And if it maladapts, then it stops the in, it, it keeps the family unit together, but there's a price to be paid. It means that the individuals can't flourish. It means then that when, going back to my earlier illustration, it means that when you have the family round, you're part of your brain wants to behave like an adult and to be taken seriously. But sure enough, by the second day, when the family's got used to being back together again and has fallen into those roles and those rules, you'll find yourself then playing the role that you always played as a child. And you may or may not be happy with that. It's a bit like child's clothing. They fit once, but as you grew, the clothes didn't. And you might find yourself now constricted and dreadfully restricted from being who you are because you've got those childhood clothes on, as it were. Let me give you an example of that. I remember in 1995 having a panic attack, quite a severe one actually, and it was one that completely caught me by surprise. I hadn't actually had one for a decade or so, but I instantly recognised it because I had a childhood full of such panic attacks. And to cope with it, I went to walk up some hills nearby. I phoned in sick. It was a Monday morning, and I phoned in sick. And I was wandering these hills, just trying to calm down. And I had my Bible with me. I actually read the story of the Nativity. Now, you may or may not believe that as literal truth, or it may be a symbol of a story which can, a metaphor, if you like, of universal truth. But nonetheless, I was reading it, and there was a phrase in that story, and it said this: you can take the child back to Nazareth, because those that sought the life of the child are dead. And you know, it was as though a light bulb went off in my head. And I instantly calmed down, and my body calmed down, and stopped sweating and hyperventilating, because it was as though the higher part of my brain, prefrontal cortex, which is just behind your forehead, switched on, because I understood that my emotions are the lower part of my brain, and my body were behaving as though I was still a child, as though they were my childhood enemies, as it were. My childhood insecurities were real. And of course, there was a mismatch between my inner history and my external circumstances. And that was just a wonderful experience for me, and one that I thought a lot about, and one which developed into a technique, which I'm going to share with you. Because when you find yourself in the midst of that family dynamic, and you're finding yourself falling into destructive family patterns of behavior which stop you from being you, and you feel as though you've let yourself down and lost that sense of inner integrity, and you can't be yourself. Well, let me give you a few tips. First of all, you need to listen. Listen especially to your body. I'm not saying you're going to have a full-blown panic attack like me, but listen to your body, because your body, the body remembers. And as you encounter those family dynamics, you might find your shoulders tightening, or your headache starting to develop, or your stomach starting to feel, you know, the butterflies in your stomach. You might feel yourself starting to sweat, and so on and so forth. So listen to your body. Don't ignore it, because that is it's your brain telling you that you feel as if you're in danger. In future podcasts, by the way, we're going to talk a lot about neuroscience. I find it utterly, utterly fascinating, and how it affects us. Equally fascinating is the techniques we can use to activate certain parts of the brain, as I did as I overcame my panic attack all those years ago. So the first of all, then, is listen to yourself. The second thing is step aside. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, in the same way that, as I read that phrase, that those who sought the life of the child are dead, it's stepping aside from the immediacy of your emotions, and then observing yourself doing those. It's a bit like watching yourself in a mental mirror, and that distance of objectivity will bring a certain amount of perspective. By the way, very useful technique that I've found over the years is to actually go into the bathroom and talk to yourself in the mirror. Just don't get caught, that's all, because people will think you're mad. And talking to yourself means that it's almost like the parent part of your brain takes over from the lower part, And if you find yourself falling into those family dynamics, give yourself a break. Don't condemn yourself. Just pop up to the bathroom, talk to yourself in the mirror, or mentally step aside and observe yourself. That objectivity seems to loosen the power of the emotions that you feel. And then the third thing is, this is the brave thing, start to behave in a different way. I don't mean launch a protest march down the middle of the living room with banners and whistles because your distant uncle who's visiting has started to engage in casual racism. I don't mean anything like that. What I mean is just start to own yourself a bit, push back in terms of territory, especially if it's your own house, and just not engage. You can do it gracefully. You can say, oh, I'm not sure I agree with that, and then change the subject. But what you're doing is starting to reclaim yourself, your inner territory, and then starting to step aside from the rules and the roles that you find yourself forced into and which actually stop you from flourishing. In other words, where people are trying to fit you into your childhood clothes. The other thing I'd say is this, just as I finish, if you're a parent, what's very useful is you don't have to pass on the family misdynamics into your kids at all. And quite often your kids will comment, won't they? Make little observations in all innocence. And they're picking up the tension. They're picking up the, and it could be that they're picking up the joy as well. And so as a parent, what you can do is talk to your kids, especially your teenagers, and ask them, what did you observe? Did you notice when Auntie so-and-so did this? Did you notice when Nan said that? How did it make you feel? What was the emotion? And most importantly, if you can get them to think about why the other person behaved the way they did, positively or negatively. If they observed anger, teach them that anger is always a secondary emotion. Anger is usually a manifestation of fear or shame. So there you go. Those are my top tips for the holiday and for all year round. You'll succeed, you'll fail, but at least you'll give it a go. I hope you enjoyed listening. And if you are about to celebrate Christmas, have a good one and you will survive it and you'll have a great time, hopefully. And I'll speak to you on the next podcast. Thanks for all your questions and comments, by the way. I'm looking through those and we're hoping to answer them in future podcasts. Thank you and goodbye.